Om Agyana Timanandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chaksur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Vidati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Prajana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shiva Sakhan Svitamscha Hey Krishna Karna Sindo Dinabando Dugatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishubhanu Sutadevi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakapa Dhruvyascha Kripa Sinubhyevacha Padidanam Bhavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasudhi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 29, Talks Between Narada and King Prachini Barhi, Text Number 74. Evam Pancha Vidam Lingam Tri Rit Shodasha Vistritam Esha Chaitanaya Yukta Jiva Iti Abhidiyate Evam Pancha Vidam Lingam Vivrit Sodasha Vistritam Esha Chaitanaya Yukta Jiva itya vidyate evam pancha vidam lingam Jiva itya vidyate evam
thus
pancha vidam
the five sense objects
lingam the subtle body tri rit influenced by the three modes. Shodasha 16. Vistritam expanded. Esha this. Chaitanaya with the living entity. Yukta combined. Jiva the conditioned soul. Iti, thus, abhidiyate, is understood. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The five sense objects, the five sense organs, the five knowledge acquiring senses, and the mind are the 16 material expansions. These combined with the living entity and are influenced by the three modes of material nature. Thus the existence of the conditioned soul is understood. Please repeat. The five sense objects. The five sense organs.
The five
knowledge acquiring senses.
And the mind.
Are the 16 material expansions.
These combined with the living entity
are influenced by the three modes of material nature.
Thus, the existence of the conditioned soul is understood.
Purport, Lord Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Amayvangso jivaloke jiva-bhutak-sanatana manakshastran indriyani prakriti-sani karshati.
The living entities in the conditioned world are my eternal fragmental parts. Due to conditioned life, they are struggling very hard with the six senses, which include the mind. Here it is also explained that the living entity comes in contact with the 16 material elements and is influenced by the three modes of material nature. The living entity and this combination of elements combine to form what is called Jiva Bhuta, the conditioned soul that struggles hard within material nature. The total material existence is first agitated by the three modes of material nature, and these become the living conditions of the living entity. Thus, the subtle and gross bodies develop, and the ingredients are earth, water, fire, air, sky, and so on. According to Sri Madhvacharya, when consciousness, the living force in the heart, is agitated by the three modes of material nature, then the subtle body of the living entity, consisting of the mind, the sense objects, the five senses that acquire knowledge, and the five senses for acting in the material condition, become possible. So the verse again. Evam pancha vidam lingam trivrit chodasha vistritam esha chetanaya yukto jiva itya vidyate. The five sense objects, the five sense organs, the five knowledge acquiring senses in the mind are the 16 material expansions. These combine with the living entity and are influenced by the three modes of material nature. Thus, the existence of the conditioned soul is understood. Namo Vishnu Vraya Krishna Pristaya Bhutai Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Namine Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Vracharane Nirvishesha Srinivadi Paskatya Deva Siddharana. Here our conditioned life is explained. And if we understand this, according to Bhagavad Gita, we can get free from the material energy. In the 14th chapter, Krishna says, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Parambuya, Param Gyanam Upashi, no, Parambuya Pravakshami, Gyanam Gyanam Uttamam, Yaj Gyatva Muniya Sarve, Param Siddhim Ito Gata. Krishna is going to again explain knowledge to us, but in a way which is more easily understandable by us because it's more or less within our direct experience. When we're hearing about love of God, pure devotional service, many things in that line, it may seem rather foreign to us. But when we hear about the three modes of material nature, these things are very dear to our heart, very much our experience since time immemorial. And then Krishna says, Idam gyano upashitya mama sadharma agata sargepi no pujayante pralaye navyantanti cha. By becoming fixed in this knowledge, and the word is idam ashritya, taking shelter of this knowledge. If we don't take shelter of this knowledge, then we're already taking shelter of so many other ideas. The living entity needs some conception of life, otherwise he can't do anything. If we sat there, we had no idea what was going on, we wouldn't know what to do. Therefore, we need some conception of life. Unfortunately, generally our conception of life has nothing to do, or very little to do, with objective reality. It has to do with our conditioned life. So Krishna says, idam gyanam upashitya. By taking shelter of this knowledge, one doesn't have to become disturbed at the time of annihilation or born at the time of when everything is manifested again. Mama yonir mahad brahma tasman garama dadamyaham sarm bhava sarabhutanam tato bhavati bharata. It should be understood that all living entities take birth in this material nature. Oh, mama yoni, oh, that's the next one. Sarva yoni shikondiya morti yaksambhavandiya tasam brahma mahad yonir aham bija pradhapita. It should be understood that we've taken birth in the material nature and that Krishna is the seed-giving father. It's not that the material nature gave birth to us, but we took birth in the material energy. And our father is Krishna, just like Narayan, he was speaking to little Krishna holding some fruit salad in his hand and a buffalo horn stuck in his belt and saying, "Aren't you my father, the original Narayan?" And Krishna said, "How can I be Narayan? I'm just a little cowherd boy. Narayan is the one who causes the creation. I don't even know which hand to put my fruit salad in. It's in my left hand, can't you see?" No, then Brahma wasn't convinced. He said, "No, I know you're actually the real Narayan, the source of all Narayan." So, ete changsa kalapumsa, Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. Indriyani vyakulam lokam ridayanti yuge yuge. Birth after birth, or millennium after millennium, Krishna is taking or adventing here in the material world. And of all the different expansions and Narayan forms, everyone, he's the source. So that's good news. That Krishna as a cowherd boy, he's not very fearful. The worst he does is he steals butter and yogurt. But luckily we have no butter and yogurt for him to steal. So we don't have to worry about that. Of course, apparently he kills demons sometimes, but that's just play for him. And he doesn't even kill them, it's his Narayan expansions, or Vishnu expansions that kill the demons. Krishna simply dances with the peacocks and the cowherd boys and the gopis and eats prasadam and plays. Not a very fearful personality. Unless you're afraid of losing. When he plays games. He's good at games. So he's the source of birth, and he's the seed-giving father. The material nature is where we're taking birth, the mother, and Krishna is the seed-giving father. Sattvam rajas tamayiti guna prakriti sambhava nivananti mahabaho dehe dehinam avya. At the time of creation, the three modes of material nature are all mixed up, goodness, passion, ignorance, and we get a body which is suitable for our particular karma that we performed in previous lifetimes. Everything's perfectly arranged, set up, so we can get our brand new birthday suit. And we enter into it, and our birthday suit is primarily motivated or impelled by the three modes. Although it appears that this body is alive, but actually the body's inert matter. And the impetus behind our activities are the combination of the three modes. And under different modes, we get different bodies, and in the different bodies, we perform different activities inspired by the modes. Actually, the way the activities come about are not exactly that we perform activities, although we're given some credit for it, but it's a more intricate arrangement. The living entities principally subjected to material influence in the form of desire, which we could say is the three modes. In the mode of ignorance, we desire laziness. Well, we're influenced by laziness, madness, and sleep. And in the mode of passion, we're influenced by lobha, by greed, karmana ashama spriha, lobha pravritti arambha, karmana ashama spriha, rajasya tani jayate, riridam, bharatarashiva. Lobha Pravritira. Desire for material gain, greediness, Pravritira, material advancement, Lobha Prarambha, intense endeavor, Ashama, unlimited desires, Spriha. I don't know what the difference is. Ashama, Asha means wanting material acquisitions or benedictions, and Spriha really means material desires. So when these increase, we should know that the passion is acting on us. And Prakasham Cha, Parittim Cha, that's all right, mode of goodness. Yatha Satve Puride Tu, Pralaya Yata Deha Brit, Tadotamam Vidam Lokam, Amalam Pratipadite, or Yada Satvam Puride Tu, that's right. Anyhow, when the mode of goodness increases, all the gates become illuminated by real knowledge. In other words, the mode of goodness is simply the absence of the other impelling aspects of material nature, namely to become unconscious and simply enjoy the senses, or to make some kind of material advancement. In the absence of those, one is relatively more peaceful, if not seeking for liberation from misconceptions of life. In any case, due to our past activities, these influences are there upon the soul, and the soul, in ignorance, he accepts these as reality because his consciousness is unclear. In other words, we look out in the world and we don't really see what's going on. We see through the eyes of our conscious, or through the conditioned state that we're in. And we accept this as an objective reality. As a matter of fact, that is our reality. That's the bubble of reality that Krishna has created with the material nature. And the material nature is very active. She's in our heart, she's speaking to us, telling us what we're seeing, what we're experiencing, and telling us what to do as a consequence of our conception of life, to make our lives more comfortable, or to make our life, or to protect ourselves. So we take this all very seriously, as if it was the only thing in the universe. And of course, under the spell of the false ego, we're the center of some drama. We're the main actor in some drama, the hero or the heroine in some drama that we think is going on, that no one else in the whole universe is thinking is going on, but we think it's going on. And every single drama that the soul is thinking is going on, he's the hero, he's the center of attention. But no one else thinks that. They think that they're the center of attention. So this is the power of the false ego. And under these influences, subtle desire influences us to perform activities. But as soon as the soul ceases to identify himself with the subtle desires, then no longer is he influenced by them. If we think that this is me and I must perform these activities, then we're influenced by them. Therefore, sometimes the devotees chant the mantra, "The mind is so powerful. All glories to the mind." Chanting like that, of course, we simply become more and more under the influence of the mind, glorifying the mind. "Oh, great mind, I'm surrendered to you. I can't surpass you. I surrender." No, unless one adds the ingredient, the missing ingredient of Krishna, then it's not possible to change our desire, because there's nothing to change to. We may change from the mode of ignorance to the mode of passion, or from the mode of passion to the mode of goodness. Krishna says there's always competition amongst these modes, but ultimately it's all mundane. It's all different degrees of imprisonment. So unless one changes one's objective towards serving Krishna with our present senses, mind, and intelligence, then one remains somehow or another captivated by the material nature and gets another body in the future to perform similar activities. Therefore, it's karshati. Material nature is a struggle. It's presenting itself as a struggle to us. Struggle to get something we don't have. Trying to get something we don't have is very difficult because there's so many obstacles to getting things. So many people are competing for these things. Material nature doesn't give itself up so easily. So it's a struggle if we want something we don't have. To get something we already have is not so much of a struggle. Isn't that right? Every day, if you're looking for beads and they're right on your table, it's not a big struggle to get them. But if the mind says, oh, those beads are so heavy, don't pick them up. Then that may create an unnecessary struggle. But generally speaking, for things we already have, like if we want a material body, we don't have to pray for one. We already have one. And if we want another material body, material nature will very kindly give us another one. On the other hand, to try to avoid losing something is quite a struggle, as we can see. Sometimes we may vow, I'm not going to lose my pencil, and the next moment we can't remember where we put it. So to avoid losing things in this world, what to speak of our body, which we're losing at every moment, is quite difficult. So karshati, it's a struggle. But to become a spirit soul, that's quite easy, because we're already a spirit soul. Simply we have to give up this desire to struggle for something we don't have, or to avoid losing what we think we have. We have to give up that struggle, and then there is no more struggle. Of course, what are we left with? We think, what am I going to be left with? We'll be left with Krishna and ourselves and reality. But of course, unless we have some experience with what that reality is, we'll think it's something, we'll have our own conception of what we think that experience will be like, because that's conditioned life. For the materialist, being left with nothing means that there'll be, it's a horrible thought. It's the worst thing that they can think of. That's for them, it's death. For the spiritualist, to be left with nothing means that they merge in Brahman. And for the devotee, well, usually the devotees are all confused because their mind, they go from one thought to the next all the time. So they don't know what's going on sometimes. But they have some idea objectively what reality is, and they're always lamenting how short they're falling from it. But in any case, knowing what the goal is and having some idea, then we can measure our experience, we can measure our objectives against it. And although we're clouded by illusion, and we can't really see things properly, nor can we experience things properly, and we're being subjected to the three modes at every moment, still, the beacon of transcendental knowledge can guide us towards reality if we accept it. But not just during the Bhagavatam class. Not, oh, in the Bhagavatam class, yes, that's right, I always knew that all the time. And then we walk out of the Bhagavatam class and our false ego guides us towards our next objective in life. No, we have to walk out being guided by transcendental knowledge and take that as the only objective of life. And with such knowledge, therefore, in spite of the fact that we have material body and mind, which are certainly going to influence us, because we're very influential, we can be influenced very easily, whatever the body and mind goes through, as soon as we forget reality as much as we have understood it, then we become affected by these things. But if we get affected by them and we suffer, then the result shouldn't be that we complain how much we're suffering. We should realize I must take shelter of transcendental knowledge again. And if I get into a pleasant situation, dukeshu va managmanaksukeshu vigatas priha Vitaraga Vyakroda Stitadhiramun Uchade. If for the 5 minutes during the day, if we're lucky, suddenly we think, oh, peace at last. Should I read the Bhagavatam or go to sleep? Oh, go to sleep, why not? For a little time we get some peace, then we shouldn't think, oh, let me enjoy this peaceful moment. No, we should perform our service in such a state of consciousness. Not that our whole objective is, let me struggle for the rest of my life to get my 5 minutes of peace every day. No, we should struggle, but our struggle should be that when we do become peaceful, then at the same time, we execute our devotional service, whether we're struggling or we're peaceful in any circumstance, we realize that actually I'm not really this body, nor am I really these modes of nature that are affecting me. I'm actually transcendental. And if I simply become steady in my service, Krishna will recognize that and bless me with transcendental realization. So by hearing transcendental knowledge, then if we hear it in the right attitude, in the right way, from the right source, and we hear it long enough, then we accept the knowledge and we can understand it. And then by performing our service in that knowledge steadily over some period of time, when Krishna sees our steadiness, that we've actually accepted it, then he gives us transcendental realization. And that what seemed very difficult before becomes very easy and simple. Maya, one of the definitions of Maya is to make something very simple very difficult. So that's material energy. Everything is very difficult, just like Indra Duha Maharaj. One time he was flying with Srila Prabhupada from Paris to London, and when they arrived at the airport, the bags didn't come, they were late. So everyone left with Srila Prabhupada back to the manor, Bhaktivedanta Manor, and Indra Duha Maharaj was assigned to stay back and wait for the baggage to come. So some hours later, the baggage came. He was all by himself, because who would want to wait with him when Prabhupada was there? So he was pulling these heavy bags, gets into the car, drives to the manor, takes the bags out, and he arrives just in time when all the feast was finished and everything was done. The only thing left was an empty plate for him. So he pushes the book, he drags the bags up the stairs at the manor, knocks on the door, drags the bags into the door, and Prabhupada comes out of the room. And he pays obeisances, and while he's paying his obeisances, he feels a slap on his back. And Prabhupada says something and then walks out. So he sits up and he's wondering what happened. What did Prabhupada say? He said, in this world everything is very difficult, but when you get to the spiritual world it will be very easy. Of course, if we take shelter, we like our struggle, we feel proud of my struggle, or we feel so overburdened by my struggle, I'm being crushed by my struggle, I'm such a humble person, I really appreciate how humble I am and how much I'm suffering. I should be glorified for all my suffering. So that's one thing we become attached, and the other is, I have struggled more than anyone and done more than anyone, and I'm a self-made man, and in the future I'll even be more and more. I'll go down in history as the greatest struggler. So if we're attached to our struggle, or we want to be glorified by how I'm being crushed by my struggle, the proverbial person who's being exploited by the material nature and still holds up his head in spite of all the adversity, the Nietzsche's amongst us. No, if we're attached to these things, and then we'll come back and we'll get another opportunity to go through that same struggle again. And if we're willing to give it up and accept the easy, simple process of Krishna consciousness, the happiness that comes from Krishna consciousness, that we don't have to walk around telling everyone how miserable I am, That if we want to be, if we accept being happy, we want to accept reality, then Krishna consciousness is available if we accept the actual process and not become bewildered by the modes which are constantly influencing us. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any comments? Questions? How do we get free from attachment for our struggling? Well, one thing is we can do is we chant Hare Krishna. And while we're chanting Hare Krishna, all these thoughts that go through our mind, we practice not paying attention to them. Instead, what we do is we try and chant more sweetly, more attentively, more sweetly to Krishna. And if we do that, then the result is Krishna will reveal himself to us. When he reveals himself to us, then we can understand a little bit more clearly that all these thoughts that I thought were so important had no significance whatsoever in my real life. So everything depends upon how attentively and how lovingly, affectionately, happily we chant Hare Krishna. And we can apply the same consciousness in any service we're doing. But that's easier while we're performing any service if we remember to do it for Krishna as he would like us to do it and in order to please him. And of all the services, the chanting is the most effective. Yes? Well, Arjuna asked a similar question, so I guess we can explain it the way Krishna did. Shreyan svadamo viguna para dharma sunustita shrey dharma nidayak shreyak para dharma bhayavaha. That what is the force by which one is, Krishna said, it's better to perform one's own duty than someone else's duty. Because destruction of one's own duty is better than to follow another's duty is dangerous. And Arjuna asked, because people have a tendency to do the wrong thing, so he asked, Arjuna vacha ta keno priyuktoyam papam purusha. Papam purusha. No, ata chenam priyuktoyam papam charati purusha anicca napi varshneya baladiva niyojita. He asked, what is the force? And of course we find out it's lust. And then Krishna says, lust covers the soul and impels the soul. And it's situated in different places of the body. And then what does Krishna say? As one of the beginning solution, you know? What's the first Krishna thing Krishna advises the soul to do? Tasmatvam indriyanyado niyamyam bharatarshava patmanam prajihi enam jnana vijnanam nashanam. Therefore, in the very beginning, Arjuna curbed this great symbol of lust by regulating the senses and slay this destroyer of knowledge and self-realization. So he advises us to regulate our activities. So in one sense, for instance, in the most basic sense, one time Prabhupada was in San Francisco, and he asked Shyama Sundar to carve the Lord Jagannath deities. And it went on for some time, and then Prabhupada was wondering why it's taking so long, so he came to their house, and in their house, when he saw the unfinished forms of Lord Jagannath, Lord Baladeva, and Srimati Subhadra Devi. And on the top of Srimati Subhadra Devi's head was a pack of cigarettes. So Srila Prabhupada took his cane and knocked the cigarettes off. Srimati Subhadra Devi. And then they discussed about the carving of the deities, and at the end Prabhupada said that he took out one of the cigarettes and said, don't let this stand between you and Krishna. He said the best thing to do is every day you, I don't know how many cigarettes in a pack? 30? Okay. Say 20. How many? 20. So say there was 20. So he said every day you smoke one less cigarette, and at the end then you just give it up. So when we see we're doing something wrong, then at least if we can't just give it up by taking shelter of Krishna, at least we can regulate it and gradually take shelter of Krishna, and rather than just try to go cold turkey all at once, try to regulate it. And then Krishna says, it's possible to do that, ultimately, because Krishna is superior to everything else. And if we do take shelter of Krishna, and factually come under the internal energy of Krishna, then we'll get the spiritual strength to conquer lust. So ultimately, the real regulation is to pray to Krishna, chant Hare Krishna, and even if we still feel impelled by this material nature, gradually, if we keep on doing that, gradually the material energy will diminish the influence. And what we thought was impossible to conquer over before, we'll be able to conquer. Well, even we probably won't even remember what we couldn't conquer over. Well, we have to chant Hare Krishna nicely. Krishna has to be there. Everyone has thoughts, but only the devotees can chant Hare Krishna in such a way as that Krishna becomes present. And when Krishna is present, we won't, the happiness that comes from associating with Krishna is so great, we'll forget about everything else. Chanting nicely, then we'll have something to concentrate on. If you chant schnick, schnick, ram, 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 day, 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 hey, kitty, kitty, hey, kitty, kitty, and concentrate on it, you'll get bored after a while trying to concentrate on it. But if you chant, we chant, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. And if we feel good and it sounds sweet to us, then we'll have something nice to concentrate on. I mean, the devotees don't recognize that their sadhana is not so, it's not as good as it should be.
It's practically offensive not to recognize the problem and deal with the problem and direct it really, especially when it comes to the relationships. They're not very interested in the relationship.
Well, they're not, most of our problems will just go away if we actually chant nicely. Generally, of course, at the same time, we have to have knowledge, because without knowledge, we can't chant nicely. And one of the offenses is the blessing of the devotees who dedicated their lives in propagation of the holy name of the Lord. That's one of the offenses. So it's not that the holy name, Krishna, is only in the holy name, it's also in the hearts of all the devotees. So as we can't worship the deity and step on his toes at the same time, fanning the deities and kicking him in the toes, so in the same way we can't worship Krishna and offend the devotees. So in order to chant Hare Krishna nicely, we have to give up our offenses. But we don't have to go through a whole psychological thing. We simply have to recognize that everyone is Krishna's servant. And that since I'm Krishna's servant, I should also serve them. How to serve them, I should pray to Krishna for the intelligence. So it really depends more upon my consciousness than exactly how they're relating to me. If I know what Krishna wants me to do in the relationship, then my part is perfect. And then I don't depend so much about how they're acting, and then I react to it. No, I react simply by taking shelter of Krishna, and then I'll be able to have a perfect relationship for my part. Anything else? Thank you very much. Grantharaj Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande Haribol.